Welcome to Empowered, Mind Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe.
Spiral. Welcome, everyone. Spiral out. Today we have Dieter Randolph, a third-generation minister, a writer, a coach, a teacher, and a podcaster. Welcome, Dieter.
Well, thanks so much. I'm really excited to be here with you today.
So good to have you. And I love your story. You say it started when you left the family business. Right? And in order to find your true purpose, your real path, and that's what you teach others. So we should just start with that story.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am I'm a third generation minister. That means my parents and my grandparents were ministers. And already that's pretty crazy. But, you know, it's one of those things where, as I always say, if your parents and your grandparents are plumbers, you're probably going to be comfortable with a wrench. And in fact, not question whether or not you should have a wrench in your hand. You know, it's one of those things. And I have to say that I am incredibly grateful to have been raised with the idea that you should have something bigger than yourself as a priority and that you ought to serve other people. I think that's beautiful. And I think that no matter what one's concept of the church thing, whatever flavor of the religious experience is, hopefully those two elements are present in some modality or another. You know, obviously there's a lot of distinctions and a lot of differences and a lot of other stuff going on, but at least those things, and I'm really grateful for those things. But like I said, I was raised with, this is what we do. You know, church is the thing, to the point where, you know, I never really looked forward to Christmas or Easter the way that other kids would, because for me and my family, these are working days. You know, I mean, maybe there'd be presents and that kind of stuff, but that wasn't the same vibe at all. And so I grew up with a different idea, but I also grew up as a crazy overachiever. And so I started college when I was 13 and I graduated and I went into seminary very, very young. And when I was a teenager, I was elected the International President of Prayer. That's an actual title. And what that meant is that they flew me all over the country to go speak at churches and run retreats and all that. So I was in. You know, in every sense of the word, the woman who is now my wife, we met when we were teenagers in the youth group. I mean, you name it, I was part of that experience. And like I said before, there's a lot of it that I'm grateful for. But on the other hand, and here's the thing, I was also aware that no matter how open-minded and accepting you try to be, just that word church conjures up some very negative emotions and experiences for a lot of people. And they're not wrong. There's a lot of people who have been really burned by that. No matter how inclusive you try to be, when the word itself can feel exclusive to a lot of people, well, it's problematic. Mm. And, you know, by the time I was 21, I was married, I was an ordained minister, I had a little kid, and we were running a storefront church, which I really don't think I had any business doing, because people would come in the door looking for, you know, advice, guidance on how to live their lives. And I hadn't lived any of my own life yet. I was living what I was expected to live, you know? And once again, that's with all kinds of love and respect. It's just the way it was. And I did not yet have the understanding, the emotional acumen, let's say, to get the idea that, you know what, you can be called to something, but not have to do it in the way that you think you have to do it. You know, I didn't know that. And so what I did know was I've got this sense of calling and I have this idea of something bigger than me and service like we talked about, but I just can't do it the way my folks and my grandparents did it. I just can't. And so I walked away from it. I walked away from the whole thing and I got a quote unquote real job, you know, and I just, that's where I went. And I, well, in fact, we had a little one. And so my wife and I did everything we could think to do. And I worked in a record store and I sold used cars for a little while. That didn't work so well, but I did all kinds of stuff. And I ended up in the computer industry. And so I did websites and stuff like that for people. And I worked my way up, which is a crazy thing when everybody else in the room has a degree in computer science and I've got a degree in theology. You know, I come from a different planet. And yet I did okay, made a little bit of money. I ended up working for Google and all of that kind of thing, but wasn't super happy doing that either. Because what I had yet to understand is that you really can have it both ways. In fact, you're supposed to. You're supposed to involve your head and your heart. And I thought you had to turn off one or the other.
Mm.
So I was pretty unhappy. But, you know, by outer appearances, you know, I was keeping up with the Joneses and all that. It just, oh man, it really was kind of soul crushing. But what started to happen is I started to open myself up to the idea that, okay, you know, I'm not going to do my spiritual path out loud in any kind of way, but I am going to embrace it. And so I got back into prayer and meditation, and I picked up some of the old books that I had put down a long time ago. And I started thinking about these things, not because it was a have to, but because this speaks to some part of me, you know, and it wasn't for anybody else. It was for my own sanity, you know, frankly. And what started to happen is people would find me. It was crazy because I'd be getting ready to go into some meeting about computer stuff. And somebody would say, hey, you know, can you stick around after this meeting is over? I want to talk to you about something. And I would assume that it would be something about, you know, the report filing structure or some, you know, code related thing. And inevitably the person would say something like, hey, I'm going through a divorce and I wonder what you think about this and that and the other, or what do you think happens after we die? Or all of these big questions that I certainly was not advertising that I had an interest in, because as you might imagine in the modern workplace, you don't talk about that kind of stuff or HR will contact you. You know, it's one of those things. And so we'd end up having to find, hey, let's go for a walk or let's go out to lunch and we can talk about this. We can't talk about this here in the building. So it was like some kind of weird spiritual underground.
Yeah. It's like you had this little sign on your forehead that you just couldn't, that wasn't going away. That was going to be erased, right?
Yeah. And you know what? I think that all of us do have that sign on our forehead, but it's a matter of being honest about it. And I really had to back into it. You know, I came from a place where, okay, well, that's what my folks do. And so that's not it. You know, and I have to be clear, I have a very happy, healthy relationship with my parents. It's not like there was abuse or anything like that. It was great. And when I chose to walk away from it, I think they were confused, but they were accepting about it because they wanted me to be happy, you know? So I think I had it a lot better, a lot luckier, if you want, than some kids that walk away from what the folks are doing. And yet I had to find out the hard way that it was okay, you know? Yeah.
So it's almost like as a young child, you knew that it was part of your soul purpose because you were so immersed in it, like hardcore, like crazy, like so young. And yet maybe it was just about restructuring that original blueprint in a way, like doing it in a new way.
Yeah. And I think that one of the lessons that I want people to think about is sometimes doing it the hard way is a really, really great thing. I think when I think about all the lessons I've learned in my life, most of them come as a surprise. You know, they certainly didn't come in a way that my ego was expecting, right? So I think a lot of times the concept of having a 5-year plan or declaring what you want the universe to give you, I get it. But on the other hand, that's only going to take you as far as your ego. I don't want the future version of me to be constrained by my present understanding, you know? And so sometimes it's okay to be surprised. And I think often it's really okay to not get what you want. There's something really beautiful about not getting what you want. And that sounds funny, but you know, when you think about the hero story, every hero story that's been repeated over and over again since the dawn of humanity, there's always that pivotal moment in every hero story where the hero doesn't get what they want.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Luke Skywalker would have liked to hang out with Obi-Wan Kenobi. I mean, Harry Potter would have liked to meet his parents. Frodo did not want the ring. You know, over and over again, there's these moments, and not just in the movies and books we read, but in wisdom literature of every culture, there's that moment. And maybe several moments. And it's in those moments that the hero really becomes a hero. And so to those people who feel that spirituality is about manifesting what you want in life, I think, okay, I get it, but that's not the whole picture. Because again, love, for example, is incredibly inconvenient. It's out of your comfort zone. And so is art, truth, beauty, revolution, honor. These things require us to stretch and grow. And so maybe we're not supposed to look for the way that we're supposed to do it. Put another way, more relative to my story, I was good at being the kind of minister that my parents were because I'd been trained for it my whole life. But the lesson is just because you're good at something doesn't mean you're going to be deliriously happy doing it. Instead, maybe we should be looking for the thing that we're not good at, the thing that challenges us, because we're here to grow. We're not here to just maintain.
Yeah. So challenge and a little out of your comfort zone. Is that what
Yeah. I really want people to start thinking in terms of that. I think that we have this idea in our culture that a successful person is a person who's never surprised. A successful person is a person who always gets their way and all of that. And I think that that's actually a boring person, or put another way, a dying person, you know, because there's the life of us is a surprise. The life of us is spontaneous and passionate and unknown and unknowable. There's something way too big. And so if we just lean into the parts that are expected, we're missing out on so much magic. You're certainly missing out on love.
Yeah. Expected and safe.
Yeah.
And
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, just, I think following your excitement and just saying yes can lead you through the doors that are completely unexpected.
Yes. And I think that safety is really, really overrated. I mean, look, at the end of the day, there's a part of you that is infinite. Call it what you want. I'm not interested in brand recognition for this stuff. There is a part of you that is beyond all of that. When you look past at your life, at the stories of the things that you have lost, you know, there are things that you really thought made you. A lot of people identify with their job and then they get fired, or they win the lottery and they don't know what to do. A lot of people identify with a romantic partner, but maybe that's not such a healthy thing. A lot of people identify with the place that they grew up and this and that and the other, the things that they own. Well, you know what? A lot of times those things are gone and you're still here. So there is some part of you that is bigger than any outward set of circumstances. And so at the end of the day, if you're afraid of loss, you got to go, well, look, if I can lose it, then it ain't the truth about me. And I don't know about you, but a lot of times when I lost in the outer, it ended up that what really happened is that the universe needed a more honest version of me. And that some stuff got out of the way and it was really great. Yeah, it didn't feel great at the time. And it's okay to mourn and grieve your way through that. But at the end of the day, it's pretty great. So not so much to be afraid of about not being safe. Put another way, what is safety anyway? I mean, I want to know exactly what I'm going to wear, where I'm going to be. I don't want anybody to be able to break in. I want the meals to be planned at a certain time. Well, you know what? You're describing prison. They got great bars on those walls. You know, meal times are very, very predictable. The outfits are very, very predictable. You know where you're going to be tomorrow. Yeah. And yet everybody who's in prison is trying to get out. So I think safety is overrated.
Yeah. Well, we think we can control our lives, right? And that's where that over control, we think it's going to give us safety. But
yeah.
The universe hears that too, right? And doesn't exactly open the doors to something new.
Exactly. And in fact, I would say if it can be controlled by you, how important is it really? You know, you're in control of a lot of things. When you brush your teeth, great, not very exciting. You are not in control of falling in love. You're not in control of being inspired. You're not in control of these beautiful, big, deep things. So who cares about control?
Yeah. So what was the moment for you, because you were so enmeshed in being a minister so young, what happened that just made you give it all up? And then, you know, and then you had to refine who you were, which takes time, but what was the moment?
Well, it was really a series of little things. It really was. But I think that the thing that really just froze me solid, you know, just really changed things for me was, it's a story that I love to tell. When I was running that storefront church, I didn't have much to do. you know, nobody came in. It was this little tiny thing. It wasn't like I had this huge congregation of people to go serve or anything like that. My wife was working as a telemarketer to pay the bills. We couldn't afford a phone at our house, but we had a phone at the church. You know, I mean, this was a very tiny operation, and I was just scrambling to try to do anything I could to just, I wanted to go do minister stuff, you know, cause this is how this is going to grow. This is what you're supposed to do. This is what I was trained for, and so on. And so I went around the town that I was in to see if anybody needed the minister for anything. This sounds like a funny thing, but that's what you do. You know, you go to funeral homes. Does anybody need a funeral, but doesn't have a religious professional to be there? You go to hospitals that ask if anybody needs visitation, stuff like that. It's one of the things that you do when you start a new church in a new area. And in that town is a very, very famous cancer hospital. I went to the cancer hospital and I said, hey, I'm here. I got my little literature that they gave me. I'm happy to go sit and pray and talk with somebody if they want visitors. And I had been said no to a lot. Cause again, I was 21. He's like, who the heck are you, kid? You know, in your little tie, you know, the whole thing. But the person at the cancer center desk said, hey, glad you're here because we've got a bone cancer ward here. And bone cancer is an immune related thing. And it's really, really rough. And a lot of times when people have it, they look bad to the point where sometimes relatives don't visit as much as they ought to and stuff like that. And it's a tricky thing. It's challenging all the way around. It's kind of a death sentence for the most part, you know, so on and so forth. It's hard. And so anytime we can get anybody else to just come in and sit with people is beautiful. So thanks for showing up. And I realized how much I did not want this person to tell me it was okay to come in because it was really scary, all the things that she said to me. And I'm giving you the Cliff Notes version. But so you get on the elevator and you go up to the floor and they usher you in. And because it's an immune thing, you know, now we're kind of experts because of COVID stuff. But at the time, you know, you mask up and you gown up and the nurse times you while you wash your hands to make sure you're clean. You know, that level of things. And I was scared to death. What if I do this wrong? What if I say the wrong thing? What am I supposed to say? And all of my training is gone. I forgot everything. But I went in and they showed me to this lady's room. And she didn't know anything about me or the religious tradition that I was from or my training or anything else. And she introduced herself and she looked like one of those ads for, you know, if you can donate 30 cents a day, you can feed these people. She looked completely emaciated, completely weak, and just, she looked like you could just, you know, a stiff wind to blow her off the hospital bed. But she had these amazing, intense eyes. And she looked at me with those eyes and she said, hey, before you say anything, I want you to know something about me. My name is so-and-so, and I won't tell you her name. And she said, and I'm getting out of here. And they had just told me nobody's getting out of here. You know, and in that moment, I forgot all of my training and all the stuff you're supposed to do when you go for a hospital visitation. And instead, from I don't know what place, I just said, why do you say that? You know, I lost everything I was supposed to say. And she said, because I know something that these other people don't know. She said, they make us go to all kinds of therapy and group sessions. And we all sit around and we talk about, here's when I got my cancer. And here's when I got my cancer. And when my cancer happened, here's what happened. And she said, the thing that I know that these other people don't know is it's not mine. It's not the truth about me. I'm going through it, but it's not who I am. And because I don't identify with it, it's not going to stay with me. I'm getting out of here. And it was so inspiring. And her sense of certainty and faith about that just raw faith was unlike anything that I had encountered going to seminary. And it didn't make me feel wrong. I want to be clear about that, but it did make me feel like, wow, there's a whole hunk of this that I just don't understand at all. I might have some stuff in my head, but I sure don't have this in my heart the way that I need to. And I started to question the whole thing. And that's when stuff started to unravel for me. Like I said, I didn't feel wrong, but I felt like, okay, this has got to be done a different way.
So it was where you started to question where the passion came from. Was it yours or was it someone else's?
Exactly. And here's this person who didn't have any training, who hadn't read the books I read and all that, who was so clear on it. And I'll tell you, I started making a point to go visit her every day. And I got so much more out of those visits than she did. And then one day I went in and it was just like a movie and there was somebody making the bed. And I said, what happened? Oh, well, she went home. And you have that moment where you go, well, when you say home, what do you mean? You know, is she, you know, how is she's gone, but is she gone, gone, or is she gone, gone? You know, kind of a thing. And they're like, no, she went home with her family. She's good. I thought, wow. And I'll tell you something else. 20 years later, I was doing a workshop somewhere. 20 years later. And after you do the thing, everybody, you know, you go to a place where people hug and shake hands and sign your book and all that kind of stuff. And there was this person with those eyes. And she's perfectly healthy. I didn't recognize her except for the eyes. And she said, I don't know if you remember me, but my name is so-and-so. And I said, I'll never forget you. I think about you just about every day. And so it's, yeah, this stuff works, but it doesn't work because you read a book. It works because there's something in your heart that connects with something that's eternal.
Yes. So tell me about that heart connection, because I think that's super important.
Yeah. Well, I think that the thing that I want to say, first of all, is that, you know, when I tell that story, and I love that story, I think it's just so awesome. And I feel so honored to get to be a part of that story in some small way. When I say that, I think that there are some people that go, okay, well, I don't have any kind of concept. I don't have anything in me that's like that. Do I have to buy something, or should I just not have any hope for it? What's the deal? And I want to make it very, very clear that everyone already has a connection to something. And it might feel like a very small, silly thing, but there's something you do that when you do it, you lose track of time. There's something you do that you just can't explain it to anybody else. And in fact, people just don't understand around you. There's something you do that it just moves you. And it doesn't have to be a big, like, you know, curing world hunger kind of a thing. It doesn't have to be a big, I'm going to put all this down and go join the circus kind of a thing. It can be something very small. Like when my favorite song comes on, I got to get up and dance. It could be that you make a chocolate chip cookie recipe that just blows everybody away and people ask you to make it all the time. And you just love doing it. It doesn't matter what it is, but there's some little thing that you do. Look, when you're in love, you'll go stand out in the rain, just like every love song says. You know, there's something you do that all of a sudden things like Maslow's hierarchy of needs are meaningless. Well, that is your connection to the truth with the capital T. And your job is just to lean into that. And you will start to string those moments of meaning together. They will get bigger in you. You'll get better at it.
Yeah. And eventually you can see the pattern and what the bigger contribution is.
Yeah. Yeah. You get good at it. You know, it's a funny comparison, but I often compare it to, this is going to sound crazy, but I compare it to a phobia. And it's a funny thing to say, but they say that if you're the kind of person who has a phobia, you are more likely to develop additional phobias. There are very few people that just have one phobia. And the argument that the experts have on that is that your brain is wired in such a way that you're susceptible to creating that kind of pattern as a response to stimuli. It's just one of those things. And so the job of a therapist or a psychiatrist or a whoever, the job of them is to try and help you rewire your brain so that that's not your response. And so you can back off of a phobic reaction. That's how it works. Well, in the same way, you can wire your brain and your heart to be more susceptible to moments of meaning. You can get good at finding them, and you're going to have to start small, because I'll tell you what, as you know, and probably everybody listening knows, that we're not trained for that in our culture. We are trained to be good producers and consumers. We're trained to get good grades. We're trained to fit into the system. Well, meaning explodes the system. Meaning has nothing to do with profitability. Meaning has nothing to do with a commodity or what's expected. We just talked for a long time about how the unexpected and the unknown and frankly, the uncomfortable are what we ought to be searching for. So we're just not trained for it. So you're probably going to have to start small, but start with the fact that, you know what, when earth, wind, and fire comes on, I got to dance. Whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is, but start with those things where, you know, I just got to. One of my favorite books is a book called Lessons in Truth. It's just a beautiful, beautiful book. And in that book, the author, Dr. H. Emily Cady, she says, you'll know it's true just like you know you're alive. In other words, nobody can argue with you. Like, look, I know I'm alive. You can't prove it or disprove it to me. It's like being in love. You can't prove you're in love. There's no equation for that. There's no formula for your favorite song. Well, these are the best things about you, right? These kinds of things. And so ask yourself right now, wherever you are in this life, what do I know just like I know I'm alive? What do I know just like I know I'm in love? And it might be a very, very short list, but there are some things that you just know, full stop. No explanation, no qualification. You just know. And your job is to lean into those things, to string those together. And in the process, you will rewire your brain, your expectations, your heart, your experience, and you will create more and more and bigger of those moments. And something amazing happens because you start to realize that you inspire other people too.
Yeah. And you find your place and reason for existing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love how you say to start small. Because it is like building a muscle, isn't it? And when you have experienced it, it's like an inner feeling that you have to get back in touch with.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And as we say, it is a lot like building a muscle. And it's okay if you start with low weight, high reps. You know, it's just one of those things. It's just how it is. And, you know, I sometimes tell the story of when I met my wife. And the thing is, it's kind of the same story in a funny kind of way, because it's got some of the same themes. Because I grew up, I went to college very early. Because I grew up in church, I didn't get to hang out and socialize in the way that other kids my age did. And combine that with for whatever reason, I don't know why, but I had this idea from a very early age that if I was in a relationship, if I had a girlfriend, I would be okay. And there's a million reasons for, you know, why somebody might do that. But when other kids were saying, I'm going to be a fireman or an astronaut, I was saying, I'm going to be married. You know, it was like that level of that thing. I felt like that was like the happy ending, happily ever after kind of thing that you get. So I was looking for that at a very early age. Well, that's not super healthy for a little kid. So I would date in the way that someone who's a early teenager would date, you know, if you can even call it that. But I would immediately be like, hey, let's name our kids and let's talk about where we're going to live. And that's coming on way too strong, you know?
At 10. And
yeah, exactly. Just about, you know, but it got to the place where the only place I could meet girls was in the teen group of my church. Because I was going to college and I was 13, 14, 15 years old going to college. You don't meet, you know, there's no girls there for me. You know, it doesn't work that way. But I got to where I would look forward to every Sunday and I would just, you know, I'd put on extravagant outfits and I'd put about $30 worth of hair gel in and I'd do all of the things that I was like, this could be it. And I'm going to meet somebody. And sometimes I would meet somebody and most of the time I wouldn't. And sometimes we'd go out and most of the times we wouldn't, but it never worked out because that's trying too hard. And then one Sunday, I looked across the ocean of personal care products and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to wash my face and put on some jeans. Clearly, I'm not ready for this because I got my heart stepped on an awful lot. I'm not ready for this. I'm just going to actually maybe go learn something for a change. And that was the day that Jenny walked in. And we just celebrated 27 years of marriage. And people say, you know, well, what was that like? Because I knew when she walked in the door. But it wasn't like the movies and there was no, you know, crescendo of music and there was none of that. It was more like, oh, hey, there you are. Like when you see a friend you haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that my point to telling that story is, first of all, if you get past what you think is going to happen and you just let yourself be open, great things happen. That's part of it. But the other thing is, you know, it happened not because there's some dramatic, you know, film at 11 moment, but rather it's a moment of, oh, there you are. Cool. There's my friend. Okay. And so start looking for that. It doesn't have to be so dramatic. You know, it can just be okay.
And there's an important part about knowing that that is something that you really want in your life. But then it's the letting go of how it happens, right? Yeah. And that's what you did that day.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you look at the pattern of experience, you know, you can say miracles if you want, you can say manifestation if you want. I want to make it as broad as I can, so I'll just say experience. There's three things that always happen. And I call those things see, speak, and surrender. In other words, I think a lot of people think that a miracle happens because I spoke the word and I said the right affirmations and I learned the password or something and then God let me in or something like that. But the truth is there's three things that happen. First of all, prayer, if you want to call it that, doesn't start with what you say. It starts with what you see. You see something, you let it fill you up to the point where you can't shut up about it. You have to take action. You go and you do something about it, and then you get out of the way. See, speak, surrender. Fill yourself with something to the point where you are moved to action, and then go do something about it, but then let it go. You know, if you have those three things going on, and once again, if you follow the pattern of every miracle story you read about in the Bible or any other wisdom literature, it's there. Those three things happen.
Yeah.
If you think about your life when something really good happened, you got filled up, you did something about it, you let it go. If you can do that, that's really, really healthy. I think a lot of people are really good at one of the three of those. There are some people that are super good at surrender, but they never do anything. There are some people that are just all action, but they never let it go. There are some people that are just so filled with a vision of beauty and love in the world, but that's great. If you don't do nothing about it, who cares?
Yeah.
You need all three.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Action's super important, and then surrender.
Yeah.
So is that mostly what you teach people now? Because that's what you experienced and saw the beauty in it and you felt it.
Yeah, exactly. And it all comes from that kind of a place. You know, I think that so often it just has to do with remembering that you're part of something really big and your job is to lean into that and use it to help somebody else. And everything else tends to work out. It doesn't have to be too complicated, but that's at the nucleus of it for sure.
Right. And there's an element of learning to listen in stillness.
Yeah. Because it starts with letting yourself be filled up. You got to start there.
Yeah. You know, there's a really cute story that my sister told me this morning. Mm-hmm. In the spring, she lost her Yorkie, her dog that she loved so much. My God, she was so heartbroken. Mm-hmm. And then because we're in COVID, it was really hard to find another puppy. She started looking a couple months later and she took some action and, you know, sent the message out that I want, you know, I need to have a puppy in my life.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so she went back to the girl that made her previous puppy and asked if she had one, but they were backed up for months. And so she took some action and went and played with the puppies. And this girl saw the connection. And unexpectedly, she got a call a week ago that there was this puppy available.
Nice.
And then, so she went, she got the puppy and she didn't know what the name was. And she had like this list of names and it just didn't feel right. And then one day she was quietly, you know, picking, you know, puppy accessories and the name Lola came to her.
I like it.
Right. And it doesn't, the crazy thing is when she told the breeder the name, she's like, oh my goodness, we have a long line of Lolas. Like it's in the generational. So what happened was the puppy told her the name that he wanted,
nice.
That she wanted. Right. But she had to be still to listen. Anyway, it's just such a beautiful story.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, right? I like that.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to get out of the way.
Yes.
You know, I think that that's kind of what spirituality is getting out of the universe's way. I always tell people that life should feel a little less like paddling and a little more like surfing.
Yes, I love that. Riding the wave and letting go of the sides.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
So what else do you teach people about empowerment?
I think that it's important to, as much as it's important to start figuring out what to follow, I think that it's also important to figure out what you should stop following. You know, I think that, you know, you gotta make room in your closet before you can get new clothes, right? You gotta get done with some stuff before you can get new stuff. You gotta tear down before you build up and so on and so on. So I think that sometimes it's a matter of doing right has to do also with just not doing the wrong thing. And one of the things that has really stuck out for me is as you might imagine, in my upbringing and all of that, I've been to a lot of funerals. You know, I've been to a lot of funerals. And it's a weird thing. You know, it very rarely brings out the best in people because people don't know how to act. And you're faced with some kind of a concept of the beyond, you know, whether or not you believe in the eternality of the soul and an ongoing journey, even if you just think, okay, this is the end, one way or the other, you're looking at something big. And as I said before, I think that we're just not very well equipped to deal with that kind of bigness. You know, we're told to sort of push it aside. Don't talk about that. So inevitably, people at funerals have really deep insights because you're sitting there, you're forced to deal with it. But the funny thing is, when you're at a funeral, you don't want to share that with the person next to you because you're supposed to be grieving. We're supposed to be crying and sad, and that's completely appropriate. So I can't go, hey, Cousin Larry, quit crying. I want to tell you about this theory I have about the universe of everything that happens after you die. Well, nobody does that.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is that they talk to me, because when I have done a funeral, you know, very few people come from my congregation. Usually it's, you know, friends and family, and they go to different churches or not at all. And so they can talk to this stranger at the front of the room. And so after a funeral, I have heard everything. I've heard people say the craziest, most wonderful, beautiful things. I've heard dirty jokes. I've heard you name it. But in all of these years of going to all of these funerals and hearing all of these things, even though I've heard everything, I have never once heard somebody say, hey, that was a great ceremony, but I sure wish you would have said more about their credit score. You know, they never say, I wish you would have told me more about their height and weight. I wish you would have told me more about the zip code they lived in, you know? And so the point of saying that is, it's a crazy thing, because we all know that you shouldn't be chasing the numbers. You just shouldn't chase the numbers. They don't mean anything. And yet, most people spend most of their time chasing the numbers. If only I could make a few dollars. If only I could lose a few more pounds. If only I could move to a more desirable zip code. If only I could get a few more likes on my Instagram picture or my lunch. You know, whatever it is, people chase the numbers all the time. And what I want people to know is that this really is a you are what you eat kind of thing. If you chase something that is meaningless, it will make you feel meaningless too. And so that is the thing. Sometimes it has to do with, okay, before I can get to these great spiritual insights, I have to realize I got to quit doing the stuff that hurts. And a lot of times the stuff that hurts is just trying to quantify your life. What if you just are? You know, that kind of a thing.
Great. Even for brief moments a day.
And that's okay. You know what? We've all got bills to pay and stuff to do. I'm not saying that everybody listening should just quit their job and join the circus. It's okay if you just have moments of meaning. It's okay if you just have times that are small and isolated. Start where you start. Just like we said before, low weight, high reps. It's okay if you got to start somewhere, but start somewhere.
Yeah.
And just like I did at my day job, where people started coming after me to talk about big things, it will find you. But you got to start with an openness. And openness starts when you take out the garbage.
Yeah. Well, it starts with just getting the name Lola.
I love it.
It starts with, I too had to see that I was in a family business that wasn't my life purpose. Mm. But once I stopped and asked, what is, then the answers came.
Yeah. And I think that this is so revolutionary. The simple concept of asking questions is huge, because so many people don't know they're allowed to ask. I mean, we're kind of told to go with the flow in not a very positive way, in a very negative way. Go with what society is doing. Be part of the machine. You know, that kind of a thing. I think that so often with COVID, for example, there's been this real push to, well, we got to get back to normal. But you know what? There's been a lot of parts of normal that were not working real well for everybody. You know, parts of what was quote unquote acceptable life were not acceptable for a whole lot of people. So what if we weren't trying so hard to get back to normal, but what if we actually tried to learn something and move forward instead of going back? You know, I think that it's really beautiful to understand that if you just start asking some questions about how can I have a happier life? How can I help somebody? Service is important. How can I do these things? How can I think bigger thoughts and feel with all of my heart? If you start asking those questions, it's not only that you'll get closer to answers, because you will, but it's also that someone watching you will be inspired by your example to do the same thing. You very well could save a life, you know, just by deciding to be a little bit more like who you've always been.
Yeah. It has a ripple effect.
For sure. For sure.
Did you say service is important?
Yes, absolutely.
It's one of my favorite themes too.
Oh, good. I'm glad. It's so huge. I think so often, and we miss that part. I think that so often people think that the point of their spiritual relationship is so they can manifest a new car or something like that. But inevitably, again, in every wisdom literature since the dawn of humanity, inevitably, the point of the miracle is not the miracle. It's never about, hey, you got your money, or you got your healing, or you got your true love, or you got your whatever it is. The point is always, when that wonderful thing happens, the holy person, you know, Jesus, Muhammad, Moses, the Buddha, whoever you're talking about, that holy person will say, okay, now what are you going to do about it? Go help somebody, go teach somebody, go serve somebody. I think that it's so important. And I think that it's kind of funny that we place so much emphasis on creation instead of service. It's less important to go manifest something, because manifestation is just a byproduct. It's more important to go care for somebody. And in fact, I was thinking about this the other day. In the Old Testament, God is referred to as creator a few times, but not very many. Most of the time when they talk about God, they say, God, the one who brought us out of Egypt, for example. They talk about God as liberator. And the reason that I bring that up is it doesn't balance how often people in the Judeo-Christian tradition talk about, I want to create something. I want to manifest a thing. I want to get something. Instead of, what if we place so much more emphasis on liberation, on setting somebody free? Just like if we were to match a little bit more the frequency of how God is referred to in our lives, what if it was about helping somebody? If that emphasis shift, just that little thing, were to happen, just think of what we could do together. I think there's something really beautiful that can happen with that simple shift towards service.
Yes, it's like the key.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the lock. And yeah, we're so busy trying to find things to make us happy. But there's something in finding why we're here. It is to contribute to the whole.
Yeah.
That is so important.
I think it's the key. And, you know, when you think about in every tribal culture, when they have that rite of passage where you go from being a kid to being an adult, obviously the details vary, the stories and legends, the rituals all vary. But one thing that every ritual has in common is when you go from being a kid to being an adult, the difference is now your job is to serve the tribe. When you were a kid, you lived for yourself because you're trying to grow, you know, and that kind of a thing. But now you're grown up, your job is to give back. And I think that in our culture, in 21st century Western culture, we may have forgotten that a little bit. I think that so often we think that being a grown up means I get to do what I want.
Yes.
But the truth is, being a grown up means you don't live for yourself. You live for the tribe, for the common good. And if we started measuring success, not by how good rich people are doing, but rather by our ability to take care of each other, I think some really great things would change.
Huge.
Yeah.
You know, I found that switch had to happen when I had children. Mm. And there was a time when I have twins, and they were quite young. And I knew a lot of this stuff. Like, I read a lot, I knew a lot, but it wasn't like I was still in service to self.
Uh-huh.
But when I finally relinquished and said, okay, now I'm really like, it's not about me anymore. This isn't about me.
Right.
But everything turned around. And there's been times when I've been in this deepest sadness, and when I've asked the universe simply, how can I help? I've experienced this fill up of absolute love. Mm. And then the answers have come. Like, it's just crazy how important this is. I don't even, and most people don't, we don't talk about it.
We don't, because I just, again, this is something that we're not trained for, but I think that it's really important to measure prosperity differently. One of the things that I tell people when people are having trouble with some kind of a demonstration, you know, I can't seem to, it doesn't work for me. I can't get healthier. I can't get the thing I'm looking for. I can't get past this thing, you know, whatever it is. I have to remind people that, look, you're not the source and you're not the destination. And so many problems in having a life that works has to do with thinking you're one or the other of those things. Either it all comes from me, I'm the source, and it's the sweat of my brow, and I make things happen. Well, you don't make anything happen. You don't make money. They print that stuff. You know, you don't make it. It's not, it doesn't come from you. And in the same way, you're also not the destination. You're not where it ends. And the person who says it's all about what I can get in my life, well, that's a clog too. It's important to understand that being a healthy person has to do with being a steward, a caretaker of the flow. Your job is to be a conduit for something to happen in your life. And that means taking care of the people around you. And that means thinking about the common good. And that means going the extra mile to make sure that you've done what you need to do to be a citizen in the world. You know, and this is something that we instinctively know. You know, this goes right back to things like, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. There's a reason why that moves us when we hear JFK say that. We know that we're supposed to take care of each other, but we're just not trained for it. Yeah. So it takes some unlearning and some relearning, but it happens. It really does.
Yeah. Just to realize that it is, it's kind of a program that's in our society that we need to shed.
Yeah. 100%.
Beautiful. So any final words? Because I just feel that what you have said is like so beautiful, so absolutely perfect. I could.
Well, thank you.
Right? The beautiful droplet. Incredible. So yeah, just final kind of wrapping it up, maybe making the, just to leave us with.
Well, I want everybody listening to take some time today to go find that thing we talked about a moment ago, that thing that they do that when they do it, they lose track of time. And like I said, it could be buried under some conditioning that we've grown up with. And it's okay if you got to dig a little bit. I want you to know, here's the thing, you are worth the archaeology. Take some time to figure out what moves you. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Find the little things. Find something today. Let yourself get better at it, and everything can change for you.
To find that magic and then build the muscle. Incredible. Thank you so much. And how do people find you?
Well, the best way to find me is just by going to my website, and that's waypastokay, waypastokay, waypastokay.com. And I got a blog there. There's links to all the books that I've written, my recordings of my talks that I give. I have a little movie called Ask Dieter where people send in questions and I just answer the questions, and it's super spontaneous and crazy, and just everything is at waypastokay.com. And I'm also at waypastokay on Instagram and Twitter. Those are the best places to find me.
Beautiful. I'll put that in the show notes.
Thank you.
And you have a new book out?
Yeah, Meaning Fulfilled. It's about that thing that we talked about stop chasing what doesn't mean something and start finding what does, and how to explore that. And I'm really, really proud of it.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Thank you so much. And for everyone out there, don't forget, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. Spiral up, spiral out.